Worry about coming in. good, chilly, cold morning. Glad you're here. Let's pray and then we'll dig into Exodus. Lord, thank you for the time together this morning to have the privilege and the ability to dig into your word, to see it as you intend it to be seen. I pray that you'd help us to, again, this morning, rather than making this an academic pursuit, that we would really seek to recognize and see your heart for your glory, your heart for worship, and your heart for your people. And I pray that as we recognize that, we see that, that we would see, above all else, your faithfulness to honor your word and to accomplish your purpose. Lord, I pray that you would, for those that are still on the way, give them safety as they travel. For those that aren't going to be here because of illness or whatever, just give them rest and recovery. And just thank you for your grace in our lives. We ask this in your name. Amen. All right, Exodus, chapter 31. We're working our way to the end of the 40 days on the mountain, and we're almost there. We're almost to the end of the 40 days. This is the last bits of instruction Moses gets while he's up there. He's gotten the design for the tabernacle. He's gotten the way that the priests should be dressed. He's gotten the way the priests ought to be ordained. He's walked through some sacrifices. He's gotten a lot of information from God as he's been up on the mountain for 40 days. And at the end of it, there are two last instructions. Last week, we looked at the beginning of verse chapter 31, which is the special equipping of, the spiritual equipping of Aholiab and Bezalel to accomplish their purpose, to accomplish the building of, the actual craftsmanship for the tabernacle. And I believe it wasn't just Aholiab and Bezalel that were equipped. I think all the craftsmen were equipped for it, but they specifically were the ones who were leading in this project of building the tent. And so that's where we were last week. And it almost seems as if when we get to verse 12 of 31, there's a step back. Because we had all this information leading to all these things that need to be done. The building of the tabernacle, the making of the garments, the making of the tents, the making of all the posts, all that stuff that had to be done. And it's all there. And then God says, I'm going to specially equip these two guys and the craftsmen, and then it seems like he steps back to law giving as he says this in verse 12. And the Lord said to Moses, you are to speak to the people of Israel and say, above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath because it is holy for you. Everyone who profanes it shall be put to death. Whoever does any work on it, that soul shall be cut off from among the people. 6 days you shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall be put to death. Therefore the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day, he rested and was refreshed. So it almost feels like he steps back to lawgiving, and he steps back into the Sabbath. After he's done all this stuff saying, here's the design, here's what the priest's garments look like, here's how you ordain, here's how you ordain the priests, here's how this happens, and keep the Sabbath. It almost feels like maybe it doesn't fit. But I think actually it makes a lot of sense that he would remind them here of the Sabbath. Because if they are like me in any situation, in any case, if they have a list of things that have to get done, if they have a thing that this needs to be accomplished and it needs to be accomplished, and I'm sure that there's probably a desire and a drive to get this done as quickly as possible, to get busy about doing the thing that God has called them to do, it would be easy to work, for me especially, it would be easy to work nonstop, around the clock. Let's get this done. Let's get this accomplished. I am, as much as I talk about not being a box checker as far as worship goes, I am totally a box checker in my life. Every day when I come into the office, I sit down, I write my list of like 15 things that I need to get done that day. And as I get them done, I start just checking them off. And then I feel really good when I get 10 of the 15 done. You know, OCD that I have to actually get, I'll stay here for 18 hours if I don't get all 15 things done. And I'll just transfer 5 over for the next day. But I am driven by box checking. You can ask Kathy, the way that she can make sure that anything she wants done around the house gets done. It's all she has to do is not even tell me about it. Just make a list and stick it on the island. If I see a list on the island, I will go after that list with passion, and I will get that done. And I will drive myself to get that done without delay. And I think that could have been something that would drive the Israelites as they did that. But what God wants to emphasize here is the difference between busyness and worship. And he desires worship, not busyness. He desires that they are about what he's called them to do, but one of the first things he's called them to do is to glorify him through their obedience, is to glorify him through their love for him, is to glorify him through doing what it is that he has called them to do. And one of the main things he's called them to do is to rest every seventh day. The Sabbath is a big deal for Israel. And so I think that's why he puts it here after he's called them to do all of this work. And if you consider the project, that they've been called to do, it is a huge task. You think of the sheets, the curtains they're going to make, of the posts they're going to build, of the fine craftsmanship that's going to go into the furniture in the tabernacle, of the craftsmanship that's going to go into even just the posts for the pillars that stand up. I mean, they're going to be made out of silver. I think they call that smelted silver. That's going to be there for that, and the pegs that are going to be made to hold everything together. There's a ton of work that has to be done here, and it's a huge project. But what is important to God isn't necessarily that the project gets done quickly, but the project gets done in a way that glorifies Him. That's the significance. And there's a difference between being busy and worshiping. And I think that's a good lesson for a lot of us, is that sometimes what God calls us to is not busyness. What God calls us to is to worship Him. Now, that is not at all saying, well, then shrug your responsibilities off and stop doing it. I'm not at all saying that. I'm saying that there are times when we ought to stop what we're doing and focus on worshiping God and let those things that are screaming at us to get done stop. And to work on Him. And so that is what is, I think, driving this part of God speaking to Moses right here at the end of all these instructions, the reminder to keep the Sabbath and the severity of breaking the Sabbath. It's not just, and it is very significant, it's not just, oh, hey, by the way, I know you're going to be busy, I know you want to get this done, but, you know, really try hard not to break the Sabbath. Really try hard to, I know you're going to want to get things accomplished, but try really hard to not violate the Sabbath. No, he says, you shall not profane the Sabbath, and if you do, you will die. If you do, you will die. The wording is very strong here. The reminder is that Moses is to say to the people, above all, that is a significant starting place. This law, this instruction, this word from God stands above all of those words that he has said, especially regarding the building of, the design of, the completion of, and craftsmanship of the tabernacle and all its associated furnishings and the associated worship that goes along with it. Above all, God says to Moses, say this to the people, you shall keep my Sabbaths. You shall keep my Sabbaths. Now, why is the Sabbath so important for Israel? Why is the Sabbath so important for Israel? Well, I think it's twofold. And he tells us later on that this Sabbath is a special sign for them. It's a sign that means something for Israel that doesn't mean for any other group or any other people. Now, understanding the Sabbath is a picture of God resting on day 7, if you recall. The Genesis 1, account, God creates 6 days and rests on the seventh. And in Exodus, two times in Exodus now, in chapter 20 and here, the reason for or the drive to keep the Sabbath has been based in what God did in creation, how he worked 6 days and rested the seventh. And that really established the pattern for Israel, was to work 6 days and rest the seventh. It was the establishment of that pattern. And I'm not making that up. That's what God points back to as he tells them here in Exodus 20 and here in Exodus 31, keep the Sabbath. Because it's a picture of, and so they're going to be working hard for 6 days of the week. They're going to be working hard, but on the seventh day he commands them to rest, to stop, as a remembrance of what he had done. Now, didn't he create everything and all peoples, really, in that first part of creation? So how is this, and why is this specifically limited then to the Jews? Well, because God limits it to the Jews. And in Deuteronomy, I think we get a second reason. In Deuteronomy 5, there's a restatement of the law. Okay, remember Deuteronomy is, the name Deuteronomy means second law, or second word. Second law is what it means. And so what Deuteronomy is Exodus 31 takes place now. Deuteronomy 5 takes place 40 years from now. Right? It's 40 years later in Deuteronomy 5. Doesn't take us that long to read it, I know. But there's 40 years of history that passes between Exodus 31 and Deuteronomy 5. And so what has happened is, because of disobedience, especially at Kadesh Barnea, because of disobedience, the generation that came out of Egypt, everyone who's been 20 years and older coming out of Egypt, has died in the wilderness. They are now dead. And a new generation has risen up. So everybody, except for, I guess, at Deuteronomy 5, there are three people from that generation still alive: Moses and Joshua and Caleb. Those are the three from that generation that are still alive. As they get into the land at the end of Deuteronomy, there's only two of those people still alive: Joshua and Caleb. They're the only ones left of that generation. And that's because Joshua and Caleb said, "No, no, no, let's go. Let's go take that land. We can do this. God will give it to us. So they are all about it, and so God says they're going to get to go in, and they do. In fact, Joshua leads the conquest. Caleb gets the mountain that he asks for, and it's interesting. Again, first judge, Othniel, happens to be Caleb's nephew. I think that's significant. Talk about that later. There's 40 years that pass. That 40 years that pass is now Moses is giving the law to that generation. He is restating the law for them, and in Deuteronomy 5, when he gets to the point where he says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, he doesn't say, because the God created the earth on the seventh day he rested. He says something different. He says something that only applies to Israel and applies to no one else. Applies to no one else. He says, because remembering you were slaves in Egypt and God brought you out of Egypt with a strong and mighty hand. That only happened to Israel. That only happened to Israel. And so the Sabbath serves as a sign for Israel. One, as a reminder not to work on day seven, but also as a special covenant sign for Israel that God brought them up and God established them as this nation. There are some who would say, well, circumcision is that. Circumcision is not that for Israel. Whoa. Circumcision is really important. I'll give you that, but circumcision was given to Abraham. And Abraham, all of Abraham's descendants are not Israelites, right? Abraham had another son, and what we forget is Abraham had a lot more sons. Really? Yeah, Abraham had a son with Hagar named Ishmael. He had a son with Sarah named Isaac, and if you recall, once Sarah dies, Abraham remarries. And he has, I think, seven other sons that are listed in the Bible. And you know what happened with every one of those sons? Because of the house of Abraham, they were all circumcised. So circumcision is not just intended only for Israel. It's intended for all the descendants of Abraham, pointing back to God's Abrahamic covenant with Abraham, which said, what did it say? It said, I will make of you a great, get away from your land, get away from your people, go to a place I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. I will bless those who bless you, I'll curse those who curse you, and in you all nations will be blessed. Okay? So that is, circumcision is a sign of that covenant, the Abrahamic covenant. There's another sign that's kind of given like that, and that's the rainbow. When Moses comes off of, no, not Moses, I did it now, I called him Moses. If you know I'm talking about Noah and the ark, then you'll know I mean Noah, not Moses. But it'll come out in Moses, I promise. That's the way my head works. So when, thank you, comes off the ark, he is given a sign that is an everlasting sign. It's an everlasting covenant that God made with Noah that he would no longer flood the earth, no longer destroy the earth with the flood. And what is that sign? It's a rainbow. And the same word sign there is used here as a sign for Israel. The circumcision is the same kind of a sign. It's an everlasting sign, speaking of an everlasting covenant that God is making with somebody. God makes an everlasting covenant with Noah, got it right, as he comes off the ark saying, I will never again flood the earth with, destroy the earth with a flood. He makes an everlasting covenant with Abraham saying, I will make of you a great nation and you all nations will be blessed. And was Noah's, was the covenant with Noah based on any kind of obedience on Noah's part? No, because it's not too long after that that Noah actually disobeys and gets drunk and things don't go well for him. So it's not based on any kind of obedience for Noah. The Abrahamic covenant, is that based on Abraham's obedience? No, it's not based on Abraham's obedience. In fact, Abraham disobeys, I believe, Abraham disobeys from day one. Because he's told, get up from your place and get up from your people. And he takes Lot with him. That's his people. So I think not only that, but when Abraham gets pressured, remember, he heads to Egypt. So it's clearly the covenant that God makes, the sign isn't based on Abraham's obedience. So is the sign of the Sabbath and that special my people sign of the Sabbath, is that based on Israel's obedience? No, it's not. This is something that they're going to be his people and be his people throughout forever. And the sign of the Sabbath is a sign of that promise that God made to the nation of Israel. And it's only to the nation of Israel because God didn't bring anybody else out of Egypt. Israel is the only nation God brought out of Egypt. This is, I think, why are you beating this horse, Brian? I think this is important. It's important as we understand future things. It's important as we understand God's faithfulness to his word. It's important to understand that God has not thrown Israel off because and replace them somehow with the church. If that's the case, then the sign of the Sabbath is weak and has no teeth because it's a special sign just for Israel that says, you are my people and you are my people forever. And if we can throw off the sign of the Sabbath, then we can throw off the sign of the rainbow. And God could legitimately flood the earth again if somehow somebody messed up and there was only evil continually. I wonder if we're heading there soon, and maybe God will actually destroy the earth with the flood. After all, he can disregard that covenant. Why can't he disregard this one? Why can't he say, okay, all the nations, I'm not going to end up blessing all those nations. I'm going to tear them apart because I'm disregarding my covenant. I think it all goes back to God's faithfulness to his word. And that's significant, and that's really, really, really important to recognize God's faithfulness to his word. It's so important that when God is wanting to destroy Israel at Numbers 13, at Kadesh Barnea, what Moses uses to stop that from happening is God's own word against him. He says, you can't do that because you've got to be faithful. This is the Neil paraphrase. You've got to be faithful to your word. And God says, you're right, I can't do that, but I can destroy this generation in the wilderness, and I will do that. Every one of these people, 20 and older, will die in the wilderness. So it's that special covenant that he makes for them. It's a special sign. It's also it's called a holy Sabbath. Now, so So I think it's important that we look at what that word holy means. Holy doesn't mean that the day itself has any special value. Holy means that day has been set apart by God for his purpose. That's what holy means. Holy doesn't mean that somehow if you touch the Sabbath, you could be healed. That's not what's being talked about. And so I think sometimes we misuse that understanding of holy. We see something as holy as something that has maybe some kind of mystical powers. You see that demonstrated really as you go over to Israel, the Holy Land. There are a lot of places, especially at some of the cathedrals that are over there, some of the big churches like the Church of the Holy Sepulchre or the Church of the Nativity. That's what it's called, right? Yeah, Church of the Nativity. Those kinds of places, especially with those who are very ritualistic in their kind of religion, there will be people who just want to touch something, thinking that by just touching that, somehow, because it's holy, it will accomplish some kind of special healing or special work in them because they've touched the thing. That's not what holy means. That's not what holy means. Holy means set apart for God, set apart from something and set apart to something. This day, this Sabbath day, is a day that's set apart from work and set apart to worship. And it was not to be profaned. There is a play on words. There's a play on words. It's a strong contrast when he says holy. The day is holy, and then he talks about anyone who profanes it. They're opposites, as night and day, as light and dark. Holy and profane are opposites, exact opposites, and so. What then profanes the Sabbath for Israel? For a Jew, what profanes the Sabbath? And the answer is any kind of work. Any kind of work. Even if that work is a good work. Was finishing the tabernacle and getting it built and set up so that the people could do worship, was that a good work? Absolutely was. But if that good work was done on the Sabbath, what was the punishment? It was death. It was death. You see, God desires worship over work. Always has. Always has. It was interesting that as John came in, he asked me, John Swanson came in, he asked me, do I have anything on love, keep, and do? I actually preached a message on it, so I have it. I just got to find it. But that's always been God's desire, is always that obedience comes from a heart that is bent toward him, that loves him first, that treasures his word, and then does the thing he calls us to. That's what he wants. And the thing he called Israel to do, and this is a big deal for him, is rest on the seventh day. At least the seventh day. Now, there are other Sabbaths in Israel. There are other Sabbaths in Israel. And I could have Ron come up and he could take a whole class and talk to you about the Sabbaths in Israel, how they come before and after feast days. Or the first day of a feast is a holy Sabbath, a big Sabbath. That's why even if you read Matthew 28, at the end of the Sabbaths, plural, there is when they came to the tomb. Because there was the Sabbath for, and I could be wrong, Sabbath for Passover and the Sabbath for the Saturday Sabbath. There were other Sabbaths, but specifically it mentioned and in mind here, I believe, is that seventh day Sabbath. That's what's specifically mentioned. And I'll be honest, I don't think Israel did a good job of keeping that Sabbath in the land. Here's why I don't think they did a good job of it. There was also a Sabbath year. Every seventh year was to be a Sabbath year that they took completely off. And they counted on God to provide for them through that seventh year. According to Jeremiah, they were in the land for 490 years-ish, and there were 70 Sabbaths that should have been kept, and they didn't keep a single one of them. They didn't keep a single one of them. Because of that, there's a 70-year captivity. That's the 70. That's where 70 comes from. It's 70 years of rest the land should have had, that God says, I'm going to let the land rest for 70 years when you should have been letting it rest every seventh year. So they didn't do a good job of keeping that Sabbath. I think that's a reflection of they didn't do a very good job of keeping the individual daily, the weekly Sabbath. And I think that's why there's such a strong reaction by the scribes to Sabbath keeping. When the scribes get busy understanding the law, and this happens the scribes really came to prominence in the Babylonian captivity at that time period. And what they did was they were actually writing the law for the people so the people would have that when they got back. And one of the big things they did was expand the law. They built a hedge of protection around the law and defined what some of these terms were. All God says is no work. That's his definition, is no work. They took that and expanded it to define what work was. Taking a bath could be work on a Sabbath, because if you happen to spill water out of the tub you were taking a bath in and you reach down and clean that water up, guess what you just did? You worked, and you violated the Sabbath. So taking a bath wasn't work, but wiping up water from the floor, that was work. It's really interesting. It's an interesting read when you read all of the protections they built around that. That's kind of some of the tension between Jesus and the Pharisees, is Jesus' proper understanding of work and their improper understanding of work, and they're taking their man-made rules and regulations and trying to impose that on what God meant by work on the Sabbath. So it becomes in the captivity very significant. I think that it becomes very significant because it was largely ignored prior to the captivity. So it's for them. It is a holy day not to be profaned. The penalty for profaning it is death. It's death, and that's repeated twice. So they would get it. They would get it right. So here are the big deals: stealing, moving your neighbor's property line, murder, and, oh, by the way, Sabbath keeping. Those are all equal violation or what's the word I'm looking for? Consequences, that is death. You're to be killed for violating those things. And he makes it really clear twice. He says it. They're to be put to death. But he goes even beyond that. This verse, whoever does any work on it, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. That means he is blotted out from memory. He's taken away. It's like he never existed in the people of Israel. That's how seriously God took it. And they do that. Israel does that with some of their, with really bad characters. If you had a bad seed in your family, you wouldn't put him in the list of names. You wouldn't put him in the list of the genealogy. You would skip him. You would make his son would become the son of his grandfather, and that guy would be completely out of the genealogy because you didn't want to do that. There's a picture of even that happening in Revelation where God does that. In Revelation 7, where God lists the 12 tribes of Israel for the 144,000 witnesses, it's interesting there are two tribes missing. Ephraim and Dan. And I think they're missing because they were bad seeds. They were nasty tribes. Read Judges and you won't like Ephraim at all. Read Judges and you won't like Dan at all. Dan is supposed to settle down by Judah. That's the land they're allotted. The land they're given is down by Judah. And because they can't take that land, I don't know how hard they tried, but they can't take the land. And so they say, we can't take the land. They go up and they steal somebody else's land. They steal land up north, which becomes a center for idolatry, by the way, up there in Dan. That's where one of Jeroboam's two golden calves was placed, was right up there in Dan. So it is and they're not mentioned. And I think both of them are bad seeds that got in somehow cut off from all of Israel. That's I think interesting. Yeah, Ron. Exactly. And if you look at where Dan was supposed to be, the people that still occupy that land are the most violent and vocal enemies of Israel. That if Dan would have done his job, very potentially those people wouldn't be there today. Anyway, that's an if. It didn't happen. So anyway, that could get us way off track, and I get off track easily enough as it is. So the question, then the last thing is that I want to talk about the Sabbath is they were supposed to keep that forever. Forever. So then the question comes, why are we meeting on Sunday and not on Saturday? If it's something that's supposed to be kept by God's people forever, why don't we keep the Sabbath? Well, because, go ahead, Larry. Excellent. He is. It's exactly right. He is talking to the Jews, and the Jews are not the church, and the church is not the Jews. If we transfer everything that was for the Jews to the church, then I believe we better start meeting on Saturday. I absolutely believe that. Because it is a statute for the Jews forever. I'm not making that up. It says it right there. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath. Where is it? 15. Yeah, I don't see it in 15. There it is. Therefore, the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. 16. It's throughout their generations, a covenant forever. So the Jewish people today keep the Sabbath? I say yes. I say yes. Because it is said forever. Then why don't we as the church keep the Sabbath? Because we're not Jews. This is intended for the Jewish people. And we aren't Jews. But, well, we keep the Christian Sabbath. Right? There's no such thing as a Christian Sabbath. The Sabbath means seventh day. Well, it means day of rest. It means rest. It comes out of rest. And it was specifically designed as day seven, right? The Sabbath isn't something that we can say, I want to make Wednesday day seven. I can't do that. It's not my day to make. It's God's day to make. God is the one who designed 6 days of work and rest on the seventh. That's his design. That's his design. And he's the one who told Israel 6 days of rest, 6 days of work, 6 days of rest. Woohoo! Yeah, 6 days of work, seventh day rest. It's his day, not mine to pick when I want to have it. So why does the church meet on Sunday? Why does the church meet on Sunday? I'll tell you, because of the Sabbath. What? Seriously? Yes. The church meets on Sunday because of the Sabbath. What did the church, early church, it says, what they were doing on the Sabbath? They were doing on the first day. What was they were doing on the first day? Meeting on temple worship, but it says something else. Says something else they were doing. They were bringing their offerings. They were bringing their offerings. What does that mean they were doing? They were carrying money to the temple. What could you not do on the Sabbath as a Jew? You could not carry money to the temple. So why did they carry money to the temple on Sunday? Because they could do it legally. Well, what's that point? The church isn't the Jews, right? But most, in fact, all of the early church, what kind of people were they? They were Jews. They were Jews. So in order to keep the Sabbath, which they were supposed to do for all generations, they brought their gifts, they brought their money, they brought their stuff, contributions, they brought it on the first day of the week after the Sabbath. So that's why we meet on the Sabbath. I don't want to get into should a Christian work on Sunday, not work on Sunday. I think Colossians 2 is real clear. Let no one judge you regarding days, feast days, or Sabbaths. Colossians 2:16, I think it is really clear. What you do with that is yours. I will not judge you if you work on Sunday or if you don't work on Sunday, because that's not my position. So I'm not bringing that up. But I will tell you this: there's no such thing as a Christian Sabbath. It doesn't exist. The Sabbath is for the Jews. The Sabbath is for the Jews. What else did I have here? I think that's all I got. Any discussion, questions, comments about that? Go ahead, Arby. Harvey asks, if a person is a Jew and a Christian, is there any kind of distinction there? They got a 5-day work week. Well, you know, actually, Larry, the reason we have a 5-day work week, I think, actually comes from the Sabbath and the first day of the week. That's why we have our weekends the way we do. I think it was largely driven by the Sabbath and the Christian Sabbath. I think if you historically look at why we work Monday through Friday and not Monday through or Sunday through, it's because of an honoring of day one and a continued honoring of day seven. That's why I think we have the weekend that we call it. So I would actually agree with Larry on that one. But for a Jew who is a Christian, I think there still is reason for them to understand they should keep the Sabbath. Well, why? Well, I think it's an honoring of God. It's not in order for them to obtain grace, but because of the grace they've obtained, as an act of worship, they continue to keep the Sabbath. I think that is accurate. I don't think that's. And the reason is it's a covenant, a sign throughout their generations, forever. And for a Jew, it is not taken away. It is not taken away for a Jew. Now, and here's where Ron and I differ. I don't necessarily agree that the dietary law is something that a Jew who's a Christian has to keep. Paul didn't keep it. In fact, Paul's bold enough to say in Galatians, I'm not under the law. But this is why I think this is significant that it comes here, because it is actually this Sabbath portion is actually detached from the rest of the law and set up specially here as a sign. It's not just the law. It's not just commandment number four. It's specifically designed as a sign for the Jews. It's a sign for Israel to keep throughout their generations forever. The dietary law wasn't established that way. The other commandments aren't established that way. There's only one commandment that is established that way, and that is the Sabbath commandment. I got Ron first and then Larry. Okay, he set it aside on occasion, so he didn't think it was a requirement for him to keep it forever. So we agree. So I'm walking away. I'm not letting him talk again. It's the first time I got him. Go ahead. Go quick, Larry. I'm just giving you a hard time, Ron. Yes. Yes. Yep. He and I disagree on that one. I do believe it was about diet. I think it was clearly about diet because of what was said. But we're not going there. I'm not even letting him go there. He wants to, bad, but I'm not going there. Yeah, Larry. Yeah. I believe, and I was not going to go here except for Harvey's question, Mr. Derailer. He does it on purpose. I know he does. When Crandall's not here, Harvey takes over. So the only reason I'm going here is because Harvey asked the question. And the question, I think, is answered this way, that because the Sabbath is set apart as something not, and don't take me as belittling the law when I say this, as not just the law. It's not just, again, it's not just commandment number four. It is commandment number four, which is significant, but it's more than commandment number four. It's also a sign for the Jews to be kept throughout all their generations forever. And it is a sign to show to the Jews, to God, and to the world that they are his special covenant people. And when did that stop? When did the Jews stop being God's special covenant people? I will hold out, they didn't. They are still God's special covenant people. Read Romans 11. Read Romans 9 through 11. I think that really establishes the whole deal. Romans 9 through 11, Paul starts off by saying, I have this great grief, this great consternation, this great heaviness for my kinsmen, not according to the Spirit, not a spiritual kinsmanship, but my kinsmen according to the flesh. Who are his kinsmen according to the flesh? Physical Jews. He delineates that, and he goes on. He starts off talking about physical Jews. As it gets to the end of 11, he says, and all Israel will be saved. Is that spiritual Israel? When he starts off talking about physical Israel? Does this time I'll jump over to physical Israel or spiritual Israel? No, I don't think so. I think he's kept the same train of thought all the way through. And how come he responds in 11:36, the wisdom of God, from him and through him and to him, all things. He goes from having this consternation and great grief to this amazing praise service at the end of three chapters, because he recognizes that God hasn't thrown off his kinsmen according to the flesh. He's still got a plan. So that's about a four-hour conversation really to have that I'm not going to be able to do here. Yeah, Larry. Yeah, well, yeah, well, that's not a 5-minute touch or a 4-minute, actually it's a 2-minute touch. So let me agree to touch that later, okay? And I will touch that. Let me just kind of finish this section up, okay? I got 2 minutes. I think I can do this because the last thing is in verse 18. And that's the tablets. This is the first time the tablets are mentioned. And he gave to Moses, when he had finished speaking with him on Mount Sinai, the two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone written with the finger of God. So that's the first time these tablets are mentioned that are going to go into the Ark of the Covenant. They're going to become the Ark of the Testimony. And it is these tablets that God gives to Moses. God gives these to Moses, written with his finger. It's interesting that these tablets, God apparently cut them out of the stone and wrote on them with his finger. And again, I don't think there's a pre-incarnate description of Christ who came down and with his finger etched these in stone. I think that it's figurative language that refers back to these are the words of God written by God on these stones, on these tablets. We're going to find out what happens to those tablets in the next chapter. They don't exist today. Those tablets originally given to Moses do not exist today because Moses is going to do something to those tablets, pretty significantly do something to those tablets, and we'll talk about that next time. The next set of tablets, Moses actually cuts out of the stone, and God then does the the writing on them. And that's something that having reread part of that next tablet business, it does appear that God actually wrote the commandments on the tablets, but Moses cut the tablets out. So anyway, we'll talk about that when we get there. So now the stage is set. Moses has the design for the tabernacle. He has the design for worship. He has the design for the clothes for the priests. He has the design for how priesthood is supposed to happen. And he has them, and he's ready to come down the mountain. And you think everything is going to be great happiness, because remember when he went up, the people said, all that God has spoken, we will do. That was 40 days before this. All God has spoken, we will do. And something bad's going to happen as Moses comes down the mountain. It's kind of late. I'll let you go. You're dismissed. We'll talk again next week. It's good discussion, guys. Thank you.